Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to be joined on the line by Al Mackey of the Globe and Mail. Al, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
Well, just sitting here waiting for the rain to fall, so I think...
It's already falling here in Winnipeg, so it's not
okay.
It doesn't get any better, let me tell you.
Okay, good to know.
You know, Al, last segment we were just talking about the Oilers coaching moves, and we wanted to stay on that topic to start with you. You know, 7 weeks ago, the season ended somewhere around that. You know, why did Steve Tambellini take so long to make this decision to release Tom Rennie from his head coaching duties?
That's been the $64,000 question in and around these parts, because the sense was that it was time for a change. That Rennie's contract was conveniently expired. That you didn't even have to officially fire him. You could paint it as we're just choosing not to renew. But there was a sense, and a growing sense, that the old shelf life of a coach, where they needed a new voice, as good and patient and as teaching as Tom Rennie was. This group of young players moving forward needed a new guy, and no one's arguing that. But I can understand why the Oilers are thinking that. My point, and as you say, why did you wait so long? It kind of left a really good guy twisting in the wind for a long time, and there was a sense that Tom had to make this pitch to them and tell them, well, what my plan is. But I think Tom Rennie's plans were to continue to grow this group and to get a little tougher on them and demand more. But again, guys were getting hurt. Taylor Hall was missing chunks of the last couple of years with surgeries and injuries. Alex Hemsky has been perpetually hurt. Ray Whitney was hurt. So I'm not sure how a coach can put a plan in place and then have a general manager say, well, you didn't deliver, when the guys weren't even on the ice at times. So that said, I don't dispute what the Oilers are doing. I just didn't like the way they did it, and I think that's been the biggest complaint about this whole process.
Al, you mentioned plan, Tom Rennie plan to develop the team. But if you were to hire a general manager today and ask him what his plan was, I would assume the plan wouldn't involve four head coaches within 5 years. Why is Steve Tambellini the guy or being entrusted to lead this team moving forward, considering he's already now going to be on his fourth head coach?
Yeah, that's another great question. I think the feeling among the public in Edmonton, and it has been, wait a minute, if you get rid of Tom Rennie, okay, again, we can buy these things. What about the GM? What about, he's just as culpable. If you're holding Tom Rennie accountable, how about the guy who hired him? It's sort of, there's a mirror image here, mirror universes, because that same situation here in Calgary is that, Jay Feaster, his GM, has done the same thing. He finally got to bring in his head coach, Brent Sutter. Well, Sutter spent 3 years here, and the team didn't get a playoff spot. Now they're looking for another new head coach. When do the guns shift? When do the targets readjust and they focus on the general manager? And I think that's the case now. It's happened in both Edmonton cities. But Tambellini has gotten this much grace. I don't know if he's the perfect. One of the interesting aspects, guys, is that people wonder in Edmonton, is Kevin Lowe still calling the shots? He's the president of the club. He's been the closest to Darryl Cates. He's the guy who really has the ear of the owner. Is Steve Tambellini kind of the human shield? Is he the guy that has to take some of the flack and eventually he'll be so damaged that they have to get rid of him as well, but that Kevin Lowe is still the guy in charge? The interesting backdrop to all this is that Kevin Lowe was the GM of the Canadian team at the World Championships, was over there. Tambellini went over to visit. They say they're looking at prospects, which is probably true, but I think they also went to take a good look at what work Brent Sutter was doing, and Sutter is free and clear, and if they want Brent Sutter as a coach, if they want to go that step from Tom Rennie, the teacher, to Brent Sutter, the drill sergeant, again, that seems to be falling somewhat into place. So some other options, but I think Brent Sutter is certainly on their list.
Alan, right after Kevin Lowe hired Brent Sutter, the conspiracy theorists started to say that, Brent Sutter was on his way to Edmonton to become the new head coach. Do you think that those conspiracy theorists are going to be right and Brent Sutter is going to be the new head coach of the Oilers?
I have a sneaky suspicion. The only other option, the one that they've talked about, is sort of coming from within. Because with Ralph Kruger, who was an associate head coach to Tom Rennie, and of course all the assistants in Edmonton were told to sit tight, let the new guy figure, the new head coach determine their fate. So they're kind of hanging in there and seeing what goes on. Now, Kruger was addressed directly by Tambellini at the news conference the other day, and Tambellini spoke very highly and said, here's a guy who, good, honest, hardworking hockey guy who deserves a look. Kruger filled in, of course, when Tom Rennie was felled by that puck in the head and had some concussion issues. So that he's had a little bit of a look. And then Todd Nelson from Oklahoma City, who's got his team into a playoff series in the AHL against Toronto right now. So both those guys are promising coaches, but again, do they have the track record? They don't have the track record in the NHL that Brent Sutter does, and Brent also has the World Junior experience of showing he can work with younger players. So I think Brent is at the top of the list, and I think Brent would be willing to jump back in and coach again. He addressed the issue kind of at a goodbye news conference here in Calgary when he was named by the Hockey Canada group for the World Championships, and he said, you know, Edmonton, and he said, well, you know, there's never been a Sutter who's, for all the connections, there's never been a Sutter who's head coached in Edmonton. He kind of chuckled and laughed and then kind of sidestepped the issue. So he's on their list. Whether they can get a deal done remains to be seen. I think they can. I think he's sort of the number one candidate right now. Unless some guy from within, I say either Kruger or Nelson, really stuns them, I'm leaning towards Brent Sutter because I just think he will give them something that I think that he couldn't come across here in Calgary. And I think the reason for that was too much of the same voice here. I mean, you go from Daryl Sutter to Jim Playfair, who tried to be like Daryl, to Mike Keenan, to Brent Sutter. I think the players here in Calgary kind of went, we may have changed coaches, but this is the same voice, yep, the same message, the same drill sergeant that we're getting now over and over and over. We need something different here.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve by Al Mackey of the Globe and Mail. Al joins us from Calgary. Al, sticking with the Oilers for a little bit longer, moving away from the coaching search, though. The draft is coming up, and the Oilers are now at their now familiar first overall spot in the draft. Do you think they go defenseman Nail Yakupov, or are they maybe looking to trade for a blue chip, player that they can plug into the lineup and enjoy the fruits of his labor for the next 10 years?
Yeah, I think the trade option is first and foremost with this group, because they don't need a Nail Yakupov. And while we saw him here at the World Juniors, and he is definitely an outstanding player. We saw Philip Forsberg here at the World Juniors, and he, again, another bright young prospect. So who's the top-rated defenseman? Is it Matt Dumba from Red Deer? You know, again, does that possibility become even greater when you've got, the Red Deer Brent owner Sutter potentially being the coach, mm-hmm, of the Edmonton Oilers, Brent Sutter? The needs in Edmonton, of course, are on the back end. Everyone knows that. And they've got enough young guns and talent up front. They need to kind of balance out somewhere up front with some experience and some size. But I think that they're looking at trading it. I think that's their best choice, and they definitely need help defensively. They think they have Devin Dubnyk's going to be their goalie. I mean, Javi Bulin's set to come back. He's 39 years old, 1 year left on his contract, so I'm assuming he's coming back. But I think this is the first time that they legitimately can say, we're open for business. Give us a call, guys. We're willing to listen to what you have, and here are our needs, and defensemen first, and let's go from there. So, yeah, I do. I do think they'll trade it.
Moving south down to Calgary, Al, you mentioned Daryl Sutter, and before we get into the Flames as they are now, can you kind of talk about maybe the feeling in the Flames organization with respect to the success that Daryl's now had in coaching the Kings and the run that they're making right now?
Yeah, I think there's a begrudging acknowledgement. I think Daryl's time, again, had run out, because the longer you stayed, now he'd stayed as he had a great rush as a coach, getting a team to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final, one win away, mm-hmm, and he was able to trade off that for a great period of time. But the longer you stay, and then you move into the GM's seat, and then you start to make trades, and the more trades you make, the more that can kind of work against you, and you build up that sort of negative ledger. And that's what happened here. I mean, trading, no one was opposed to trading Dion Phaneuf. Again, I think there was a real argument like, yeah, Dion, if he can't get it done under Brent Sutter, his junior coach, then maybe there's a time to move him. Well, then they sent him to Toronto, and that trade seemed to be kind of a grab bag of, like, what are you doing? Where are you going? You're just grabbing, it's kind of expanding, and you're getting guys like Matt Stajan, who then they signed to a long-term deal at, I think, ridiculous money for Matt Stajan. So now you're compounding mistakes. And that got to be the issue here. And Daryl was never very good at explaining himself and his means and his plans through the media to the public. And so it was kind of like, well, this is what I'm doing, and you guys don't know. And he was alienating people. So I think there's an understanding here that that Daryl Sutter is a smart guy. He comes off as the country bumpkin with the hayseed in between his teeth, but he's pretty sharp at hockey in terms of maneuvering people around and getting the most out of them. He'll get the most out of people in a short period of time. 2 years from now, Drew Doughty may just tell him to go stuff himself. So we'll see where it goes. But for now, there's a begrudging respect for that he does the job and he's giving the Kings again what they needed, that discipline, the structure, and when you're winning, boy, that sure hides a multitude of sins and mistakes. But it's long term down the road. I'm sure it'll change.
Is there a favorite for the Flames head coaching job, or as a short list, emerged? And when do you think Jay Feaster is going to make that choice?
I think the process is underway in terms of the guy that they've. It was the old story about what they say and what they don't say at the year end news conference, and the few things that Feaster said when he addressed how the year went and called it a disappointment because he had told everybody to book your playoff tickets. We're going to be there. Was the comments about Troy Ward, who's running their Abbotsford American Hockey League team, and did a really outstanding job during the course of the year when the Flames had a lot of call-ups this year. They brought in for the first time, really, the Flames gave some young kids a look. They've been really guilty of that, not doing that. So they had the young kids come up. So the roster was constantly changing the American Hockey League, but the Abbotsford, he continued to win. And then Ward put them on a nice playoff run. They went as far as they could and lost out to Toronto and, did enough job teaching. But again, I think I go back to that point about changing of the voice. And Troy Ward is somebody different. I mean, this might be a move that's similar to Tampa when they brought in Guy Boucher or Pittsburgh when they brought in Dan Blysma. They brought in someone who knows some of the young players to a pro organization that's trying to integrate more young players. Oddly enough, the thing might be, and this was hinted at, one of the big stumbling blocks here is the whole Jerome Iginla issue. And it's not the trading of Jerome. I think there's an understanding here that the ownership just does not want that to happen. But again, Brent Sutter kept talking about there needs to be more of a buy-in. There needs to be this veteran group. He said they got a lot of mileage out of the young kids. And all the talk was around Jerome and that Jerome has a certain way of wanting to play, certain style, and is not always buying into what the coach wants. So this could be interesting to see how, say, a young head coach would handle a veteran, respected captain. And how that dynamics plays out, because I don't think Jerome is going anywhere. And so I think Troy Ward is the number one, maybe the number one and only one on the Flames list. I think they're willing to give him a try and I think promote within when there's not that many choices without.
Al Mackey from the Globe and Mail, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
All right, guys, stay inside and stay dry.
Enjoy your long weekend, Al. Thanks very much.
Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Al Mackey from the Globe and Mail joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by the Cheer Bar and Grill, located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne. Be sure to go to the Cheer for all of your sports bar needs. They have a great patio, so not so much today. It's a little bit gloomy out, but assuming
still go inside.
You can still. No, I'm not. Of course you can go inside. You can go inside all
sure,
the time.
You may be a snob, but other people aren't. They'll go inside.
I'll go inside. We always go inside the Cheer. Great place. But I'm saying, if you're looking for a place that's got a great patio as well,
great patio.
The Cheer Bar and Grill is your destination. Conveniently located. Great service. Great staff. Great friends that we have over there at the Cheer. So be sure to check out the Cheer Bar and Grill, located at the corner of Stradbrook and Osborne.
Say hi to Brian, just tell him Ezzy sent you, and he'll make sure you get a free bevy.
He'll be immediately escorted outside of the...
immediately call the police.
Yeah. Before we get into some coaching moves around the NHL, I'm holding in my hands Ezra's wallet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Looks like a bunch of cards with an elastic band around them.
That is now Ezra's wallet. In fact, I'm going to tweet out a picture of it so that you can... Anybody that's a wallet manufacturer that's looking for a sponsorship opportunity, contact Ezzy Ginsberg, because he's got... five cards.
What are the cards?
There's a BMO debit card.
Okay. Well, you don't have to,
A MasterCard.
Okay.
An amazing driver's license. Definitely somebody else. an access card and your air miles card.
Oh, nice.
Held together by an elastic band.
I want to.
Are you big for air miles, Evie?
I want to clarify. I collect air miles.
You only do it with the LC. There's no way you collect anywhere else.
You think he's ever gone grocery shopping?
I want to just clarify something. I'm not pretending that like that's a wallet. I left my wallet in the wash and it got ruined. So I need I just need those five cards. So you might as well keep them together with an elastic band.
My wallet's gone.
I'm not trying to pretend like that's a wallet.
Well, what do you?
It's not like it's not like I'm using it as a wallet. It's just five cards kept together by an elastic band. I need a wallet. I haven't had time
to
go buy a wallet.
You know, wallets are not, you know, overly expensive. You can get a replacement wallet for a relatively affordable price.
I haven't had time to get a wallet. I didn't realize you were going to make it a segment here.
Well, I think it was obvious when you pulled that out of your pocket, this was going to get discussed on the air.
Maybe to you. I mean, it's just my banking cards and my license.
Drew, we'll get to you later, but your treatment of others.
You can get to me later. That's fine.
It's time to get off of this.
Yeah.
Let's keep going.
Snub.
About the coaching changes in the NHL or coaching moves in the NHL.
Yep.
We'll start in San Jose, where the Sharks announced that Todd McClellan will be back behind the bench.
Is that for sure?
It's not confirmed. It's not. Apparently, Elliot Friedman said it's a foregone conclusion.
Apparently, they're arguing over assistants.
That's what apparently is going to change. He might not be able to hire his own assistants. Elliot Friedman said,
isn't that a kiss of death, though?
Strikes me as it.
Yeah, like, I mean, if you can't hire and run your own staff, it's like Quenneville now, the idea that Quenneville and Stan Bowman have kind of come to an agreement that Quenneville can run his own staff. You need that power. Once you don't have that power, I think you're a little bit of a lame duck. It's not to say like McClellan's a bad coach either, but you're a little bit of a lame duck. And I'm not so sure how well that'll last. Never mind the fact that that team is on a downslope right now, and they need to get younger and need to improve on the back end. And, you know, can they win with Joe Thornton there?
All very good questions. I mean, to me, if you're going to hire, like you said, if you're going to have a head coach, let him hire who he wants
That's
as
just
his
it.
Assistants.
If not, then you hire somebody. I mean,
now, where it currently stands is Elliot Friedman says it's going to get done. David Pollock from the San Jose Mercury News, who we've had on the program before. Yeah, not your uncle, right? Has said it's not officially done, but it's also looking like it's a foregone conclusion. I mean, that'll be an interesting one, because this is the last shot there. If it doesn't work next year, that's it.
Yeah, but I mean, so many coaches have not made it work with that group. So, you know, and Thornton came in after, I think, he was with Wilson.
Right.
Right?
Ron Wilson.
And then you have McClellan now.
Yeah.
And you had Sutter before that, but Sutter didn't have Thornton.
Right.
But just with the core group of Marlowe and some guy, I mean, I guess Marlowe's really one of the only guys who's been there for that long. But at what point is it? You have to think, guys, that it's a group there more than anything. It's the players on the ice, or there's the coaching. I don't think it's to blame the coaching. I don't think Todd McClellan's to blame. He takes part of the, he should shoulder part of the blame, but I don't think he's to blame, you know, for a significant amount of their failures over the years. And failures is in context. They've made it to the conference finals.
This year was a failure.
Things like that. This year was a failure.
This year, if you look at, I mean, this team was a failure.
They added Brent Burns, yeah. And they added Havlett, and they got rid of Heatley. You can say whether that's a good or bad deal, but Brent Burns is certainly an upgrade over what they had before, Ezzy. And the team just didn't do it, and they've never done it. And at what point are we to believe that they will?
Yet to see any evidence that this is going to, if they're going with the same team next year.
And the problem, Drew, and we've talked about this before, is they traded a lot of good prospects in those Minnesota deals, especially for Burns.
Sure.
You know, Charlie Coyle. To name one, and there's, I forget the names of the other players, but they have a very poor system now. So as you're getting old, you don't have a great system. You're still doing well enough that you don't draft high in the entry draft. To me, I just don't see how this team turns it around quickly in the next couple of years. In the next 2 years, I mean, are they just on their way down, and are they going to try and fight and see if they can make a miracle run? Or do you consider trading a guy like Joe Thornton? Maybe, I mean, Joe, would the Toronto Maple Leafs not take Joe Thornton right now?
Well, what could the Leafs offer?
Well, maybe what you do is you elevate Couture number one spot. You put Patrick Marleau back at center instead of him in the left wing. Put him at center, and you make Couture number one, Marleau number two. You trade for a couple. Would you trade him for a couple of their younger wingers? I'm just tossing this out there. Right? Completely on a whim. I'm just wondering. I mean, you're Toronto, you take him.
Well, of the veterans on the Sharks, the one who's going to fetch the most value is definitely Thornton.
Well. And Marlon makes a lot.
Yeah.
They're the same age. Yes, Thornton would fetch the most.
Yeah. I mean, he's... Marlowe, I think, is... I find Marlowe to be overrated.
I like Patrick Marlowe's game. But is he going to be your number one or two guy making over $6 million? the question.
I think,
right?
and that contract's going to look worse as the years go by as well.
Well, he's a player reliant on speed, Drew. So I do agree with that in the sense that if he slows down, his effectiveness will, I think, it'll be one of those graphs where his age, you know, his speed, and then I think his production will go down along with that.
Yeah. Other coaching news after we got off air last week, Dale Hunter stepped down as Washington Capitals head coach. Very bizarre situation in Washington. I mean, the whole head coaching thing, everybody knew, you know, you sort of knew he was only going to last a year. I mean, even if they got to the Stanley Cup, if they had beaten the Rangers in Game 7 and they made it to the West, to the Eastern Conference Final, nothing about Dale Hunter's performance as a head coach in the NHL told me that he wanted to be there and he wanted to stick around there long term.
Well, when you have a guy who owns a team and is the general manager of a team and is the head coach of an OHL team specifically.
That makes money hand over fist.
That makes a lot of money, that is very successful, that has a proven track record of developing players to become NHL players. Mm-hmm. You have to know that there's a good chance that after the season's over, regardless if you get to the first, second round, or even if they won the Stanley Cup playoffs, won the Stanley Cup, maybe he would go back. You have to know that. And they didn't bring him in and say, okay, we're giving you a 2-year, 3-year contract. Right. They brought him in as an interim.
They would have given.
They said he didn't even sign a contract.
It was just really.
Yeah. Now it's old fashioned, Ezzy. The thing is London is literally the family business. Think about any business that you have, or the people you know, with the family business. That's the family business,
right?
And that's what he knows. You know, people know business. They know
he's got his brother
manufacturing.
There.
They know this and that. This guy knows hockey, and he's working with his owns a team, and his son works, and his brother works, and his other brother. It's a family business, and that's what he's most comfortable with. And I'll never begrudge anybody for putting family first before anything else.
I'm not criticizing.
No, I know that.
It's
know
just
that.
Why would you go? Why was he the answer for?
I think this is very much a favor. George McPhee working him over. Leontes working him over. And then finally says, okay, I'll do it for a little bit here and I'll take it. You know,
are the Capitals any further ahead than they were with Bruce Boudreau?
I have to say, that's a fair question. I think they probably are in that I think they feel like more of a team than they ever have before. But the question is, who will the coach...
Is that going to last over through the summer?
Well, the question is, who is the coach, and what does he do with Ovechkin? And it seems like the team doesn't like Ovechkin. I mean, everybody liked... Even Nicholas Backstrom was sad to see Hunter go, as he... And the only person who didn't seem to be sad to see Hunter go is Ovechkin. And the question is...
Because Hunter probably demanded the most of Ovechkin of any coach in his career.
And he cut his ice time down and all that stuff, too.
He was the hardest on him.
But the question is, that's the biggest question. Can the new coach come in and handle Ovechkin along with the 17 other players dressed, not including the goaltenders?
Who's the new coach going to be there?
That's an excellent question. I don't know the answer to that. I would assume it would need to be a veteran coach.
Paul Maurice would strike me as a... Mm. You don't like it?
Yeah.
Why? He's had success.
Yeah.
You don't think he's a good...
I don't mind him. I don't love him as an as a perspective option.
Well, if it needs to be a veteran head coach, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who else is out there on the market?
Something to...
You mentioned Mark Crawford earlier, but they
Mark Crawford has done a bad job as a head coach in his last three cities.
Yes.
Drew,
we need to get over Mark Crawford as the be-all and end-all of head coaches.
Why is he even considered?
He was bad in Dallas. He was bad in Vancouver.
Yeah.
He was bad in Los Angeles.
It was L.A. and Dallas he wasn't great in.
And then they keep talking about Mark Crawford. I don't get it.
He's a great self-promoter.
Well, kudos to him for self-promoting, but I mean, I take Paul Maurice... A guy who's won something over a guy like Mark Crawford any day of the week.
Well, Maurice made it to the finals. He doesn't want anything.
Fine. Sorry, made it to the finals. Yeah. I mean, you know, he's done a lot. He did a lot with Carolina for a number of years.
Yep.
The Capitals need a veteran coach, and they have to bring someone in with a long-term plan involved, and you've got a young defense, and it looks like Braden Holtby is going to be the goaltender going forward, so you need a guy to come in and basically establish something quickly. And, you know, back to Dale Hunter and the job that he did, he deserves a lot of credit. He got a lot out of the gritty guys on the team, and this was a team, again, that wasn't expected to go very far in the playoffs. We talked about it on this show. They weren't expected to go very far based on what they did in the regular season. So they got to bring someone in similar in style to what Dale Hunter brings. You know, I'm not assuming that decision to be made definitely before the draft. But, you know, in Washington, this is a team, too, that there's enough there that you can still make a run next year.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there are huge question marks. Semin's not coming back probably. And Alexander Ovechkin is another player. They have to find the right line mates for him. Obviously, Nicholas Backstrom works well, but they've got to pick the right guy because...
there's a chemistry issue there is.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't seem to win in the playoffs, but he doesn't seem to get... The team doesn't seem to like him that much.
If the team has settled on Holtby as their goaltender, and they should, do you think they can get a first-round pick from Greg Sherman in Colorado again for Michael Neuwirth?
Give him a call again.
Exactly. See if you can work that out. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, much more. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Shaggy?
It wasn't me.
Inevitably, I promise you, it was you, Ezra. It definitely, whatever it was you. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment of the show is brought to you by the good people at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Want to let everybody know that coming up in June, June 20th through June 23rd, Alonzo Bowden making his return to Winnipeg.
Very funny guy. I've seen him twice.
One of the best guys.
Yep.
Alonzo Bowden coming to Rumors
from California
through June 23rd. You can be sure to contact Rumors for tickets to that. And, of course, for another week tonight and then all next week, Reese Waters is performing at Rumors. A few tickets left for tonight. You can get your tickets by calling the club at 488-4520. And we have some tickets to give away for Tuesday night's show. So give us a call at 780-1290. First four callers through at 780-1290. You'll win tickets to Rumors for Tuesday night to see Reese Waters play at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. 780-1290 is that phone number.
I saw Alonzo Bowden. I believe I was with you guys, too. He was so funny that he basically just talked about how cold it was in Winnipeg. I believe he was there in March. And he just talked about how cold it was for 25 minutes, and he was hysterical. Basically nothing else. So if you have a chance, go check him out.
There's I believe it's called a Twitter meme. Is that what they're called? You know, when things sort of get to take a life on their own on Twitter?
Yeah.
There's a Twitter meme right now about, it was a year ago today, that Stephen Brent came out with his article pretty much announcing the return of the Winnipeg Jets.
Yep.
We got him on that night.
We had him on that night. It was, I remember it. I was playing softball that night, and we got a call from the station, and they said, you know, the news is broken. We're going live. Yep. So I remember coming
Remember
down
we
there.
Had a code word? It was Geronimo. Remember that? We had a code word for if the announcement came
True.
And we all got together.
I was writing my article on the soon-to-be Jets and the players that they had and all that because
right.
we thought it probably happened.
So. I was doing absolutely nothing.
No, but you were
sitting by the phone just waiting for it to ring.
Yeah.
yelling Geronimo to yourself continually.
And occasionally picking it up to make sure that there was still a dial tone there, you know, make sure the phone was plugged in and everything. But so it was, you know, it bears mentioning that it was 1 year ago today that the inevitability sort of started, and then it took another, I guess, 12 days or so for the announcement to officially happen.
Time flies, eh?
I can't believe it's already been a year.
And you got married in that year.
It's true.
Although, it should be pointed out, there's no ring.
I knew that this... I've left my wedding ring at home.
I don't know about that.
No, I'm telling you, I left my wedding ring at home. So we were out for breakfast before the show, and Laura starts giving me the gears over BlackBerry Messenger about how I don't have my ring, and you know,
didn't forget your phone, but you forgot your ring.
Thanks, Richard. Appreciate you pointing that out for everybody. You know, but it's true. I forgot my ring. I am still married.
Just gotta get that ring on, Drew. Now that you're married, that ring. I mean, that's like
get Laura on the line.
That's like when you're traveling. You know, losing your passport. It's even. But no, actually, you know what? I'm not going to compare a wedding ring to a passport. That's a bad analogy. You just always have to have that wedding ring on. And I think if Laura's listening out there, she's right to make to be mad at you. Get that wedding ring on. Wear that in the bath. Wear that in the shower. Wear that if you're at Pan Am Pool. Always have your wedding ring on your finger. You're a married man. You got to show people that you're married.
It's true, Drew.
I admit that I also should be wearing the ring. I just forgot it at home today. Well, after the program, when I'm done spending time with you people, hopefully, I will go home and immediately put the ring back on.
As you should.
To reaffirm the
Don't go
marriage.
To the fridge.
Nope.
Don't turn the TV on. run to wherever that ring is and put it on, and then apologize to Laura.
Absolutely.
Ezzy's really
she deserves a full apology.
I should be a marriage counselor.
Yeah. It's been less than a month. You're not wearing the ring.
I've never had a serious relationship, but I'll be a marriage counselor. I haven't had to, and by the way, that's with women or anybody, period.
Not even touching that
so,
one.
So, but I think I could give a very, very, good life lesson to you and Laura, and especially you. Laura, she doesn't need any life lessons, but Drew, get that wedding
ring. It's funny, because you right now have a belly button ring.
No, I have an anklet.
An anklet. The Blue Jackets also made some coaching news this week. They dropped the interim tag off of Todd Richards. He's now
to drop the
general manager's
tag off of Scott Housen. Thank you, Drew. Off of Scott Housen.
I knew where you were going with that before you even opened your mouth. Todd Richards. This is second. Coaching.
Yeah, I didn't think he was given a fair shake in Minnesota, so I don't mind that they've kept him on. It was like that was the Chuck Fletcher giving him a bad team and saying make the playoffs, and then they didn't make the playoffs and saying why didn't you make the playoffs, and he probably said because you didn't give me a good team. So
I think it should be that easy sometimes in coaching.
It should be, yeah. But in any event, I mean, you give an opportunity. He was a good AHL coach for a while. He was well regarded, so give him a shot here. What is he working with here, and what are they going to do? They passed up the Nash trade. They're going to trade Nash, and there's many decisions to be made.
It sounds like it's. Don't they have to trade him? I mean,
I think so.
They can't rebuild that relationship.
Especially keeping Richards there. It's not like you're changing a coach and bringing in some big name or et cetera. Yeah, you're going to trade Nash, and the question is for what?
And it's nice that they've taken off the interim tag because, I always almost get a little bit upset with these interim tags, and I almost feel like in the NHL the interim tag or just the idea of bringing in a coach for half of a season is overused. Sometimes you don't know and you're forced to fire a coach. And even though people seem to think that, hiring and firing coaches is super calculated, it definitely is more in the hiring process. But sometimes, a coach is fired and you don't know who necessarily is your guy. But as far as, for instance, Randy Cunningworth. This particular year. I mean, you knew...
Again, incompetent GM.
Again, you knew that he wasn't going to be hired as a head coach next year. But, as far as I'm concerned, he should be given credit. I think Randy Cunningworth is a very knowledgeable hockey person. And again, had a good track record in the AHL. But, I mean, good for Todd Richards. This is a team that is not going to be very good next year, and they are going to definitely trade Rick
Nash. I'll tell you this. John Tortorella could be the coach of the Habs. He needs to learn 10 words in French.
And he'd be good.
That'd be great.
You're not too terribly far off on that one. That's pretty funny. But, so Todd Richards is there. We didn't get a chance. What do you think about the Calgary head coaching search? There's talk that Mike Sullivan might be their guy, and that's why they're waiting.
Well, George Johnson, our friend, wrote about that, and he said because he's coaching with Tortorella, so he has experience there. He coached the Bruins. He was successful there. He was actually a young coach. He's only 44. He played with the Flames. He played with certain guys who are still in the league. He's a little bit of a taskmaster. Yeah, I mean, I think that may make some sense. Again, that would be a little bit contradict a little bit what Al said, Mal Mackey, a couple segments ago, being that, you're kind of going to another drill sergeant again. That's the impression I get with Sullivan. And if that's the case, I mean, is that the way you need to coach, or do you need to change? Because after a while, Brian Sutter, Daryl Sutter, Playfair, and after a while, is that act growing tired? So it's something to consider. I mean, there are also coaches who treat players completely differently, or you don't know. You don't know the inside workings of a room. But Sullivan's something to consider. Ward is well regarded as being a...
If Sullivan's going to be their head coach, Tortorella's away with no assistance next year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you ask him about it, is he?
Yeah, he's not going to like it.
Kind of question
much.
Is that? But no, and you look at that, Drew, Ward is supposed to be a creative mind, and are you a little bit different? And as much as I think that would be a little bit more risky in a place like Washington, I would be more apt to hire him in a place like Calgary, and you're going to rebuild and let him grow with the team and let him have experience with the team. There's no expectation to win now. At least you'd hope there wouldn't be.
Well, I'm sure there will be, though.
So
We've never seen any evidence that Calgary thinks they're in a rebuild.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, the word was around... Calgary is that Sutter said, I'm sick and tired of competing for eighth spot. It's either we do this or not. And basically they said, okay, so that was a rumor.
Which he isn't wrong with. I don't think he's wrong because, I mean, that's not a playoff team the way it's currently built. Or if it is, it's a fringe playoff team at best.
Absolutely. And if they would have gotten the playoffs, I mean, the argument you could make, and I wouldn't agree with this, but I mean, The LA Kings got into the eighth spot, but let's be honest, the LA Kings are not an eighth place team.
No.
The LA Kings, you know, couldn't score this year, and they really should have been a top four or five team. But the Calgary Flames, I mean, it's the writing's been on the wall for a really long time, and you know, the Calgary Flames are now going to have to give guys like Sven Barchi and Michael Backlund a chance. And, you know, Jerome McGinley, even though he might still have a little bit more time left in Calgary, the team around him is not good enough. And I don't see them getting anybody on the free agent market that's going to change that. So next year they're probably going to not be a playoff team. So why not bring a guy that you know you're going to give him 2 or 3 years with a young team?
Exactly.
Bring in a good voice. You know, Alan Mackey it was right. I mean, you really did have Sutter overload. And don't get me wrong, I love the Sutters. I think they're up there. They're hockey royalty.
You look at like the Sutters coaching and like the Bush presidencies in the States.
Yep.
Dynasties? Yeah. Well, think about it.
You had to have Bill Clinton between the Bushes.
Yeah,
right?
Who is it between...
Like, so who's going to be their Bill Clinton?
Keenan and Playfair between all the Sutters.
Yeah.
Sure, other coaches in there, too.
Fantastic analogy. I really have nothing else to add there.
Yeah, Greg Gilbert was there, too. He didn't do such a good job.
They've really had a few They've had a few coaches over the years there, let me tell you.
And another guy that's going to bring some of the AHL guys along, too. So, you know... There are a lot of good hockey coaches out there, and there are a lot of good guys that are looking for jobs. Brent Sutter's up there, so I mean, there for Edmonton, obviously he was let go, but Calgary has to accept the fact that they're not going to be a very good team for a couple of years. If they don't accept that,
well, they haven't, and that's where they are now. So that's that whole idea. The fans won't be patient enough for a rebuild. And then 5 years down the road, you haven't rebuilt, and you're in the same position. And you're saying they're still not patient enough. Well, they can't stand the team you put out there. Attention, Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, that's why they're not that patient. Anyways, let's go to break. Before we do, a reminder that it is Gold Eyes Game Day here, sponsored by LC Taylor. Pre-game show tonight at 6:30 p.m. here on TSN 1290. Our good friend Paul Edmonds with the call live from Amarillo, Texas. So be sure to keep your radio tuned to TSN 1290. You got us for another 45 minutes. You got the Rangers and the Devils, and then you're going to have Paul Edmonds with LC Taylor, Gold Eyes Game Day. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. You can also follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.IllegalCurve.com. This segment is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue. Pizza baked, well done. I'm going to give you an opportunity to head over to Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza. First two callers through right now to 780-1290. First two callers through to 780-1290. You're going to win a gift card to go check out delicious pizza at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza.
Hey now.
Don't look at me like that. I'm calling in right now.
I know you're calling in right now. That's somewhat troubling. Well, you know.
I ended the call.
But... actually, it makes perfect sense. You can put the gift card right into your elastic band wallet.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, so it makes sense. You know, it's better.
Hopefully,
than
it won't
cash.
Break. What if the elastic band breaks?
Well, you've tormented me enough that as soon as this, I'm going to miss the first period of the New Jersey Devils Rangers game. Luckily, I can listen to it on the radio. It's on TSN 1290. I'm going to go get a wallet just because you've embarrassed me so much. I mean, it's ridiculous.
I do it out of love, if it's any consolation.
I don't know about that.
I want to talk about JP Parise's comments.
Okay.
You know,
great
case,
hockey player, JP Anzac.
Right. In case you missed any of it, here's his quote. You know,
he was misquoted a little bit, by the way.
I don't think so. We had Arthur Staple of Newsday on this program, and he's a professional, so he's not gonna miss.
I'm not saying his article. I'm saying he's
recently clarified.
The article.
Of course, he's recently clarified because he got himself and his son into a little bit of controversy.
Arthur Staples.
Like, what is this controversy? So he said they'd fit in with the Rangers.
Why is he? If you're the guy's father and you're playing against the Rangers, why is he even answering a question?
Because they asked him.
Well, so you don't answer that question. You don't answer honestly.
I think JP Parise is a little more old-fashioned, a little bit more. laid-back kind of guy. That's apparently that's what I've heard about him. He's a character. So
come on, you don't answer that question.
Is that really a distraction?
Finals.
See, what the problem, Richie, was that the question was about playing for Tortorella for the U.S. team at the 2010 Olympics.
Yeah.
John Tortorella was an assistant coach for the U.S. team, and they asked J.P. Parise about playing for him, and then he said he would fit in there. I just want to clarify.
Read the quote, Drew.
They didn't straight up ask him if he would fit in New York.
Zach Parise likes torts a lot. Zach knows how to work. He doesn't shy away from the discipline part of it. He'd fit right in there.
That's what we're talking about?
Next.
Yeah, it's not a controversy. And to be honest with you, I mean, the fact that they're making this a controversy is a little bit
suspicious. Because Torch isn't talking. They need something else to talk about.
So J.P. Parise has to give them fodder?
Eh.
I tell you what, if I'm Zach Parise, I'm not thrilled that my dad is giving that interview at the moment.
I don't care. If I'm Zach Parise, I'm just worried about playing hockey.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything here. And the fact that J.P. Parise and then, you know, Greg Logan?
No, it was Arthur Staple.
Oh, Arthur Staple.
Greg Logan, old-fashioned reference right there.
Yeah, what I read about this in other outlets is that they asked him about John Tortorella in the U.S., playing for John Tortorella as an assistant coach, and then they made that seem like they asked him, what do you think it would be like for Zach to play in New York? There's two different things there. Basically, it just slipped out. And I mean, come on, anything slip out. I don't think this is anything to really, you know, spend that much time on, to be honest with you.
Okay, that's fine. You know, you guys throw me under the bus as
usual. I'm glad. Drew, no, that's not it at all. I'm glad you brought this up. It's definitely not that I'm throwing you under the bus. I don't think that the media should be making more out of this. And, you know, that's to be expected. The media, that's what the media does. But, you know, I really don't think that Zach Parise is losing any sleep or would, you know, call his dad up and get mad at him. I really think that this is all just a media creation. And I think, you know, this is another thing we'll just forget about two hours from now.
The NHL sent notice to the NHLPA earlier this week that they want to terminate and or modify the collective bargaining agreement.
Just technicality.
I know it's just a technicality. Yeah. You have to it stipulates that I think it's 90 days.
One party or the other. One party or the other had to do it, so I'm sure they talked to each other and said one of you will do it.
Yeah. So that's just the first step in what will be a CBA negotiation.
That's right.
I still don't see it being at least I hope it's not going to be too much of a controversial.
The numbers really.
Do you think they miss any regular season games? Because that's all that matters.
I don't, but the issue here is ego. It's not numbers. I mean, they can figure out the numbers. It's just ego of Bettman and Fair. If you brought two different people who got along fairly well, they come up with a solution pretty quickly. If this drags on to the season, then either Fair or Bettman's ego is too big.
The main idea is going to be hockey revenue.
Yeah.
You know, hockey revenue. Right now, the players get 57%. The owners will want to bring that down closer to 50%.
And that's happened in other leagues.
And it happened in the NBA. And I know the rules aren't exactly the same league to league. But shouldn't you be able to use the NBA as some sort of model almost in terms of figuring out how to do this? You know, yes, you're giving up percentage points, but
82 games and
this is what you're going to get instead.
Same schedule kind of thing. Yeah, probably.
What do you get? Earlier free agency? What do the players want? If the owners say we want it down to a 50-50 revenue split.
They're not going to drop the 50.
Well, 51-49, whatever it's going
to
be.
I'm going to have to drop that far.
Whatever it's going to be, that's what the owners want. They want to reduce the number, the 53, percentage.
53-54 makes probably sense because the owners want 50, the players are 57.
What do the players want? Because the owners are going to have to give something up.
You generally always want younger free agency. But at some point, I mean, is the NHL going to, I guess they would, but for the league to sustain itself in terms of small markets, you need to have the free agency probably how it is now for at least 7 years, right?
Right.
So I'm not so sure how much that benefits them. I don't know. I mean, you hear crazy stuff about them trying to possibly get rid of guaranteed contracts and the cap limit. I mean, the term limits and all that stuff. Maybe term limits will be instituted, but guaranteed contracts is crazy talk. Non-guaranteed contracts is crazy talk in terms of getting coming to an agreement. I think free agency probably is always the biggest concession, Drew, but to me, if you drop it a year, make it 55-54%, maybe something like that. But how many years can you drop it now?
Well, it's what, 7 years or
25.
Yep.
Yeah,
That you,
no, 7 years or...
Sorry, no.
It's 7 years.
25 years or 7 years.
Right.
No, well,
no, it's 25
no,
years
same
old.
Thing.
No, I think it's 26. 26 or 27 or 7 years or something like that.
I think it's 27. That sounds
I thought
right.
It, yeah. I thought 27 I thought it
years.
It became 25.
No, it came down, I think, to... It used to be 31. I think now it's 27 and then or 7 years. So if you play in the league for 7 years...
If you come in as an 18, yeah. Jeff yeah. Skinner, for example, right. would be a free agent right. when he's 25. Yeah.
Right. So that's what they might want to ask for, that it becomes 25?
Well, I'm just speculating. The players are going to, if the players are going to give up some of the percentage
problem is,
of revenue.
The problem with that, though, is like the Shifley case.
Right.
So say you leave him down, so there's 20, so he's 19 now, and you keep him down there next year, and he turns 20, and then you play him in the AHL, and he turns 21, and he's coming up, and he's 22, and he has two development years in the NHL, and he becomes really good at 25. See ya.
That's the problem with having...
That's a problem. And then, is it for the betterment of the league then? Right? Because then teams will be more reticent to develop their players because they'll lose them earlier, so might as well get the use out of them while you have them.
Maybe what you do is...
It's a slippery slope, Drew.
Maybe there's no age. Maybe it's just 6 years... 6 years worth of vested NHL
But
years.
Then you keep guys down for a couple, yeah. you know, Detroit keep guys down to 21, you have them until they're 28, 29. That's too long, too. I mean, I think it's right now is good. The way it is yeah. good.
Well, right now it's only 25 yeah. if you're a 5 year
old. I like the rules. I think that most of this works, frankly.
Oh, I don't think yeah. there's anything, I don't think they need to really, I don't think there's anything wrong with the current CBA, I got to be honest.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Term limits will be better for fans and trade and like term limits in terms of 6 years maximum contracts better for fans because you don't lock down 12-year deals. The players don't get too comfortable, and more importantly, it creates more trades and things like that, and fans are more interested. That one would benefit both sides, I think.
That's cosmetic.
Like frankly,
the serious underlying
yeah.
issues I don't think are very serious. That's why I have trouble believing that we're in for this big prolonged work stoppage.
I don't think it's going to
come
past September like 25th, 26th.
Well, I mean, expires September 15th. Mm,
right.
I think 2 weeks probably.
They should have it done by then if they can.
They should be negotiating now, but they have huge egos.
So they're not going to start negotiating.
Why aren't they sitting at the table right now and negotiating? What's precluding?
We don't know that each side hasn't already sort of put out their first offer.
I don't know,
but like
they've said
everybody
they
seems
been.
To be getting wealthy.
Yeah, who,
the players
yeah.
are getting wealthy,
and the only and it's funny. I was thinking about this the other day. The only things that Batman wants to repair are the
broken
floor
markets.
Of the cap.
Yeah.
Because of the broken markets. Why are the markets broken? Because you put teams there.
Get rid of
Phoenix
the
is broken because you put a team there. Florida is broken because you put a team there. The Islanders are broken because you let Charles Wang run a team. That's not what he's doing. That's why. So, and why do you want to outlaw long-term contracts, which have benefits, I think, for both sides? But why do you want to do that? Because your GMs and owners are giving out long-term contracts.
That have, a lot of them have to, been bad.
All he wants to do is stop himself and his owners and his GMs from doing something. They're negotiating with themselves.
And they're not going to be able to prevent their GMs and owners.
A new flaw in the system. The lawyers will find a new flaw in the system. The system is really not that broken, except for the part that Gary's broken himself.
Well, and if sports have proven anything, GMs and owners still can't help themselves and will always make stupid decisions.
That's right.
And they expect the players to pay for that.
You're exactly right, sir.
And that's where I happen to be on the player's side.
I'm on the player's side. Look.
There are, you know.
If somebody's willing to offer me $10 million to play a game.
Absolutely.
Why would I not take the $10 million when the other guy's offering me $8
million? The one problem I've always had, and, as far as the term contracts, you know, if you're going to offer a guy like Ilya Bryzgalov 9 years, or you're going to offer a guy like Rick DiPietro 15 years, go ahead and do it. I think both of those contracts are horrible.
Well, and it's going to come back to bite you. Don't be stupid.
It's going to come back to bite you, but I would like to see... I like when a guy sticks with a team for a while, and that's in any sport. And term limits are fine, and the free agency age is fine. I just don't want to see guys... You want to see a guy hopefully stay with a guy for, you know, anywhere. Stay with a team for 5 to 15 years. And I mean, as far as that goes, though, I mean, maybe that's something that the players do get, and you bump a year off of it. But you've got cost certainty. You've got the salary cap. Most things are good. You have to improve some of the markets that right now don't have ownership, Phoenix being the big one.
And they'll deal with all that. But to me, it shouldn't be that too big of a deal. Before we go to break, congratulations to Jeff, Ben, and Mike. You're all the winners of either the Rumors or the Carbone contest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. So you're either off for a great performance at Rumors or dinner at Carbone and everything else. Keep tuning in for more opportunities to win from our great sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club and Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's go to break. When we come back, Gabe Desjardins is going to join us. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline. Pardon me, this is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Drew, come on.
This is Gabe's,
it's only 11:30.
This is Gabe's theme music here. Because he's our hero. Like that?
Not
I like
really,
it.
No.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
I actually thought what Drew generally does after the show is just goes home, puts on Hero, and then looks in the mirror for 2 hours.
Two straight hours.
Gabe Desjardins, what do you think about being called Ezzy's hero?
I'm unprepared. I mean, you guys got to let me know in advance you're going to do these kinds of things so I can have a response.
That would assume we know that Ezzy's going to say these things, and we certainly don't, let me tell you. Gabe Desjardins from behindthenet.ca. First of all, big shout-out in the Elliot Friedman's 30 for 30 column.
30 thoughts, Drew. What a segment for you.
I'm really having trouble here today.
You're not wearing your wedding ring, Drew. If you would have had your wedding ring on, you wouldn't have had all these slip-ups.
That's true. I've lost all my powers. Your 30 thoughts column, we're still humbled you were able to slum it with us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Oh, really? Well, you know, the way you get into Elliot Friedman's 30 thoughts is that he sends you a question on Sunday night, and you turn it around in 15 minutes. That's all that's necessary.
Well done.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. Next time he asks us what's wrong with Ezzy, that's going to take a little longer than 15 minutes to get that answer. But we'll see if we can get some advanced statistics about that. Gabe, let's start with the LA Kings. I mean, you know, they're, what are they now, 11-1 in the playoffs? You know, go through the numbers. I mean, you're a big numbers guy. You talk about sort of the advanced stats, the advanced metrics. You know, what are the underlying numbers saying about the Los Angeles Kings?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing is to just go back and look at how this team's been built. You know, I think 4 years ago they weren't one of the worst teams in the league, but they had one of the worst records in the league, and they just started adding guys who really, if you look at the defense, right. Adding Rob Scuderi and Willie Mitchell, there's two guys who were very much shut down defensemen on other teams, and obviously Doughty even at age 18 emerged as kind of a potential Niedermeyer. So they've really got guys on defensive players there who are very solid by the non-traditional metrics. And a lot of they basically have followed the rule book. If there is a rule book for Moneyball in hockey, they didn't overpay for Jonathan Quick, right? They did something much like Detroit did, buying a slightly above average goaltender, although his performance has been better this year, but buying a slightly above average goaltender at the market rate, and when they had the opportunity to get stars like Carter and Richards, they picked them up. They knew there was excess value in players like that. So they've really built a team by taking advantage of all the small inefficiencies that there are in the marketplace.
Well, Gabe, when you look at the team, it seems like a bigger team, maybe a little bit slower than most teams, and is that at all in line with maybe the decisions to call up guys like Nolan and King? Is that a bit in line with the fact that maybe less penalties are being called than there were years ago, a couple years ago now, when teams were going maybe smaller and faster?
I don't know. I mean, I just think Dean Lombardi likes it when he has players who hit people.
Gabe, we had to ask you about shot blocking. Everybody, every time the playoffs come around now, everyone talks about shot blocking. Everybody's been complaining. And, I'm sitting with two guys that said that there was too much shot blocking, and I disagreed with them last week. And they said, well, maybe because Scotty Bowman brought it up, maybe they should, limit shot blocking. And I thought that was ludicrous. First off, is shot blocking up over the last couple of years? Do the numbers say that shot blocking is higher? And is there anything, that can be correlated with shot blocking and winning, and if it's effective? Or, am I right, and really people should just realize that it's part of the game, and, we shouldn't be complaining about it. It's just a tactic that's involved in defending.
Well, you know what I'm going to tell you. You're right, right? So, I mean, is shot blocking up overall? Minimally. I think that, I looked over the numbers since the lockout, and about 23.5% of all shots taken were recorded as blocks in 05-06. And this year it was about 25.75%. So it went up, not quite 10% over that time. Now, the question is this just an artifact of the way that different rinks record record shots, and that's, you know, we don't know. You know, we know that the total. I think we can be pretty certain that the total number of block shots has gone up because the total number of shots overall has gone up since the lockout. But you know, is there more? The mere fact that we see a 10% increase in recorded blocked shots, is that evidence, overwhelming evidence, that more shots are being blocked? It's hard to say. But I don't have any negative feelings about shot blocking at all. And I don't know where this, you know, I mean, maybe I slept through the last week, but I really didn't understand where this whole meme came from.
Gabe, moving to the Eastern Conference and the New Jersey Devils, you know, they've sort of been a surprise to have made it this far in the playoffs. A little bit of a surprise, not an overwhelming surprise if you look at their regular season numbers. You know, using your the advanced metrics and the advanced stats, you know, what do they say about the New Jersey Devils and how their performance has gone on throughout the season?
Well, I mean, if you saw my pre-playoff predictions, you know, I said that New Jersey's been very unclutch since they last won the Stanley Cup, and they only won one playoff series out of seven, I think. And so that was the best indicator for everybody to look at. No, I'm kidding, by the way. So anyways, you know, New Jersey's a team that was good good 2 years ago, good last year, good this year. They had some very ugly shooting percentage numbers, which really aren't all that meaningful. But there, I mean, New Jersey was one of the better teams in the league this past year, top 10. And so, you know, they're probably not quite as good as the Rangers, but there's no reason that they shouldn't be where they are. They were definitely a team that was positive on the percentages. So, getting Florida as a first round draw, mm-hmm. Even if it looked ugly in that series, was a real boon to their position.
What about the Rangers, Gabe? How do they look, I guess, looking backwards and maybe looking forwards?
Well, the thing that's interesting about the Rangers is that, you know, they didn't look all that good to start the season. They were getting massively, massively outshot, but they were really running on the percentages. You know, they had a very, very high shooting percentage and you know, reasonably good goaltending numbers. And over the course of the season, you know, they turned that around. They took that in a completely different direction, where you know they all of a sudden started dominating on possession numbers and not running on high shooting percentage. And a lot of that, you know, it's basically here was a team that looked okay, and then Carl Hagelin showed up, and you know, really the development of Ryan McDonagh has been, you know, mm-hmm. an incredible boon to them. And so they're a massively better team, I think, than they were the day the season started.
If we look at it as, I mean, LA's obviously up 3-0. I think everybody thinks they're going to take it, and 4 or 5, I think, at the max level. Do you think would LA be a big favorite over New York or New Jersey, or and maybe how do they those two teams match up if both of those if either of those situations happens?
Well, I think, you know, if you look at our favorite possession numbers, the what's known as the Fenwick close numbers, which mm-hmm. is the you know, the percentage of all shots on goal and missed shots that a team has, you know, when the game's either tied or within a goal in the first two periods, LA is by far the best team left. You know, there were only a few teams that were better than LA this year: St. Louis, Pittsburgh, Detroit. They're all gone, and you know, to some extent, they're victimized by poor goaltending. So, on a pure possession basis, you know, LA should be the favorite in this series. But you know, the difference between, you know, the number one team and the number two team in the NHL is so small, mm-hmm. that you can never, you know, you're never really going to have a huge advantage in any seven game series in any finals.
Gabe, before we let you go, plug your site.
Plug my site. Well, I have many sites now, but let's go with behindthenet.ca. It is the supposedly the premier advanced hockey stats site on the internet. And hey, I have one more item of business. I'm trying to swing a trip to Winnipeg, maybe the second week of June. So if I show up, are you guys going to have equipment for me this time, and we can play?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we'll get you.
You got a deal.
Give us a heads up, and we'll get you hooked up.
Sounds good.
As he just bought new equipment for $200 for his entire body.
Well, but I'm going to be wearing that. But we'll give you Drew's equipment because that's been collecting dust. And now he's married. He's not getting let out of the house. So we'll give you Drew's equipment.
I can't.
That's strange because all the guys I know who get married, they start playing 3-4 nights a week.
I play softball that much. Anyway.
Drew plays bridge and backgammon.
Gabe, thanks very much, buddy.
All right, thanks a lot.
We'll see you in Winnipeg. Gabe Desjardins, behindthenet.ca. Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment. It's called Rapid Fire. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Rapid Fire.
Interleague baseball time in Major League Baseball. The New York Mets arrived in Toronto all wearing different NHL jerseys. Jason Bay showed up wearing an old-school Hartford Whalers jersey. Sweet. Because he was a big fan of Ray Ferraro. They're both from Trail, BC.
It's too bad he hasn't shown up for the Mets since they signed him.
That's a separate issue altogether. If you had to sport an old-school jersey of a defunct NHL team...
California Golden Seals. I have the hat. It's great.
Really? You were really quick with that. I think I didn't even give you a heads up on that question.
I didn't even read the...
It wasn't in the script. It wasn't there.
California Golden Seals.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that was pretty...
Well, when you were in high school, they were big.
That wasn't funny.
I think I'd like to rock the Hartford Whalers because it was...
What? They just said the Hartford Whalers.
Doesn't
any other team? Like, come on.
What am I going to pretend like I'm going to rock another team? I like the Whalers. The question wasn't I couldn't pick the Whalers.
Indianapolis Racers.
Kansas City Scouts.
I wasn't alive when the Racers were in the league. I like the Whalers logo. They were around when the Jets 1.0. I'd probably rock a Whalers jersey. Your question wasn't pick a different team.
Colorado Rockies.
Go back. It wasn't different.
It didn't say different, admittedly, but it's so boring when you pick the same team.
How is the Whalers boring?
It's a great jersey. It's a boring pick.
I agree that it's a boring pick.
So it's a boring topic. Let's move on.
It's not a boring topic. It's a perfectly good topic.
Where's Remus with the IC news?
Oh, I don't think we're going to have time.
Oh, we're off time. News.
We'll have time.
Well, it's touch and go. We have to get out in time for the Rangers-Devils game, of course.
Yeah.
Alyssa Milano, star of Who's the Boss.
She's a really, really good actor.
Ran the NHL's official Twitter feed during Game 3 of the Kings.
What happened? Major League Baseball wouldn't let them run her, run their feed.
Are you referencing, Richard?
I don't get it.
Alyssa Milano has a reputation for being a bit of a
baseball fan.
A baseball fan. Yeah,
well, not a hockey fan. No. Well, but she likes baseball.
I think she has a hockey fan reputation as well.
I think she likes all sports.
What celebrity would be your choice to run the NHL's Twitter feed?
Okay, go ahead.
No, you can go first.
I'm going to go a little bit off the board. I'm going to say Snooki. I mean, we've got that New Jersey connection, the New Jersey Devils.
I like it.
Get Snooki on there. I think people would have fun with her. She's popular. She's got a lot of Twitter followers. So that's my answer.
Vince Vaughn.
Vince Vaughn, big Blackhawks fan.
What about Mike Myers?
Is that game too?
Mike Myers is Canadian. He's a big hockey fan.
Yeah, Michael J. Fox would be good.
Yeah.
Huge hockey fan.
Those are all good answers.
To a terrible question.
It's not a terrible question. Delta Airlines has offered a free charter flight.
I understand this. Why are they offering this?
Why are there flights from New... It's shorter to drive.
You haven't even let me get to
it's
the...
8 miles.
I saw the question.
Let me give the background for anybody who missed the background.
Here we go.
Delta Airlines has offered a free charter flight from New York's LaGuardia Airport to Newark Airport for Game 3. Total flight time lasted 7 minutes.
What are you, the Winnipeg Airports Authority?
No, somebody tweeted it out earlier today. We took the subway from Madison Square Garden to Newark, to the arena. It took about...
Union Station, right? To Newark. Is that Union Station?
Penn Station.
Penn Station, sorry.
Penn Station, right to Newark. Took about 20 minutes to get there?
No, it took like 45.
Was it that long?
Yeah, with all the stops.
And I had to sit
beside all the stops.
I had to sit beside you, Drew, and it was really unbearable.
And you had to make all the stops.
However long it took, why would you ever take that flight as opposed to just taking the subway?
Given you have to check in an hour before, Remus, are you ready to go?
Because it's free.
You have to check in an hour. But who cares if it's free? You have to fly from...
I'll take anything if it's free.
And see, the reason they offer is it takes longer to do that than the train. Nobody's going to actually take it. It's a joke.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
We must get in here. Though.
Maybe you have nothing better to do.
These questions here are pretty suspect this week.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you have your legal curve news?
What else is suspect has been Drew's behavior recently.
Yeah, Drew's been acting out.
I'm Michael Remus, and this is your Illegal Curve news update. Hot off the heels of last week's argument where Drew deleted Ezra off of BBM, the dynamic duo was at it again. Ezra Ginsburg recalls the story.
I'm driving home from work, and I see Drew and Laura walking Brixton, their dog, and I did a double honk, and then Drew waved. I hear Drew yell something, and I wasn't really sure what it was. And Drew claims that it was, I don't like you, but I heard an expletive.
While Drew Mandel says he did not shout anything terrible at Ezra, he maintains that Mr. Ginsburg still is annoying.
He's very annoying. You know how many emails he sent all week? How many of them were useless? They were very rude, and they were dismissive, and they were demeaning. Go do this, go do that. Like I'm his slave or something.
That was not all the host of the Legal Curve Hockey Show was up to this week. While walking in Osborne Village, he ran into Melissa Martin, a reporter for the Winnipeg Free Press, who waved at Drew. She recounts the story. Drew was walking north along the street, holding hands with his wife. Everything happened too fast for me. She stuck her arm out to wave, but Drew just walked right past her. Martin was so stricken by the incident, she said, and I quote, she felt numb. And that's your Illegal Curve news update.
Cheers and cheers. Maybe.
Remus, that was awesome.
Cheers. Congratulations.
You got a cheer?
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richard Pollock.
As he's first.
Ezra Ginsburg.
Well, after hearing that Illegal Curve news update, I have to make two cheers. First off, a cheer to Michael, because that was by far the best thing we've ever done in the show. But my second cheer goes to Marty Broder. I mean, of all the goalies, nobody's talking, giving anybody credit. Marty's not getting any credit, but at 40 years old, he basically was the better goalie in game two. He's getting it done. Everyone's talking about Jonathan Quick and Mike Smith. Nobody talks about Marty, but, you know, he's a pretty good goalie, and he's playing pretty darn well, so I'm cheering Marty.
From now on, we're just going to record your cheers, and Jared. It's never changed.
I'm cheering Steve Tambellini for not being a man and letting Tom Rennie go soon after the season and letting him sit there and wait just like he did Pat Quinn and not manning up.
I'll wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to jeer Colin Coward. Colin Coward on his program said that the NHL journalists are young and immature. Obviously, that's not even a factually correct statement, never mind how dismissive it is to reputable, quality journalists that cover the game. Michael Farber, Kevin Allen.
Richard Pollock.
Every journalist. Everybody. I mean, I can name them all. They all do a fabulous job.
What does that mean? And let me ask you, would he say that? Sorry to get in here, Drew. Would he say that if NHL was an ESPN property?
No, he wouldn't. He wouldn't. It's just such a...
I'd say he's a coward.
Cowherd, if you will. Nice pun. Anyways, we'll leave it there. So that's my GR for this week. That's it for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday morning. We'll be back on, depending on the NHL schedule, probably back at noon next week, regular start time. Big thank you to Devils Radio play-by-play guy Matt Laughlin. Big thank you to Al Mackey of the Globe and Mail. Big thank you to Robin Short of the St. John's Telegram. Big thank you to Gabe Desjardins of BehindTheNet.ca. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Carbone Coal Fired Pizza, The Cheer Bar and Grill, and David Carr of Melopoly Realty. For Ezra Ginsburg, for Richard Pollock, for Michael Remus, and for producer Tim, I'm Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Devils Rangers.
To the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk. Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.